That's right. Michelle and I are super excited about our new sponsor, Cody's Creations. Carrie Beck of Cody's Creations is a local collar maker here in Massachusetts, but don't let that deter you for all of our national listeners. She will gladly mail her stunning products all over the United States. And at a discount to you, 15% off all of your orders if you order from Cody's Creations. Her website will be found in our notes of this episode, and then we're also going to put them on our website. But the code to get the 15% off Cody's Creations is, surprise, surprise, Startline, which is fabulous. But anyways, just to give you a little lowdown, Michelle and I have to actually count how many collars and leashes and other supplies that we have from Cody's Creations, but I can safely say I have, and this is safe, at least 20 items from Cody's Creations. I started off with some of her standard collars that were, I think, about $17. And I've worked my way up to leather, handmade ribbon, hand-printed ribbon that I don't believe cost me any more than $50. And when I mean handmade, custom-made design just for Walter, Debbie, and Phoenix, I can't wait to get pictures up to show you guys how truly stunning these are. But besides collars, she literally does creations. There's collars, leashes, leash pouches, treat pouches, so much more. Cute, adorable bow ties to add to your collars. So definitely check out Cody's Creations on Etsy. We will put her website link. But remember, in order to get 15% off, use the discount code STARTLINE at checkout. Thanks, guys. And now back to our show.
Are you ready?
Steady. Welcome to Startline.
Every journey is different, but they all start with the Startline.
We're here to edutain you about the world of dog agility. The sport has changed rapidly in just the few years we have been a part of it.
Join us as we discuss our journeys, share our successes, laughs, and failures.
We will be joined by special guests, and our hope is for you to help us grow the sport we love.
Episode 11, go!
Hey guys, it's Michelle.
And Kara.
And today we have a special guest host with us, Karen Kay of K9 Fitness in Deerfield, New Hampshire. And that's K-A-Y-9 Fitness. So welcome, Karen.
Thank you for having me. It's really exciting. Everybody needs to know more about K9 Fitness, especially during this time, downtime. People have extra time to work with their dogs. And the fitness end is a lifetime commitment for people. So it's very exciting to get to talk about it.
Well, I'm super excited to have you on for several reasons. Well, one, I've been following you for a while. Two, I love the name when you released your logo and the name of your company. Because, you know, your name is Karen Kay and it's K9, K-A-Y. It's just genius. I love genius marketing. So shout out on that. And then also, you know, I've slightly fangirled you. I did take some fitness classes, but it's mostly stuff that I do for home. But I also, we were just talking about this recently. I love how, yeah, you're in Deerfield, New Hampshire, but you're also able to offer services to us through the internet. I know Michelle was talking about in May, you had every day you were doing something. And I want to discuss that. But I also want to find out, why are you here with us? And how did you get into K9 Fitness?
I have a very varied background in sports and fitness. And I was an ice hockey coach for the University of New Hampshire for a long time and with the United States Olympic team. And then got into strength and conditioning with sports medicine practice and worked in corrective exercise, where I didn't just train athletes, but I also helped in the recovery process on the injury side. And then I went out on my own when I decided I wasn't going to coach anymore and decided to have my own fitness business with humans to start with. And dogs were the hobby. And I got into agility with my own dogs. I had also worked for a veterinarian along the way because I had thought I wanted to go to vet school. So the animal side of things was always there. And I kept looking for opportunities to kind of put things together. And then the K9 fitness thing became, you know, it became certifiable. You know, you could actually go and get certified in it and do it correctly. Mm-hmm. And that was important. It was important to establish some guidelines for it. You know, everybody kind of sees the equipment out there and says, yeah, I bought one of these and I bought one of those, but it's been at home and I don't really know what to do with it. And when I got more involved in dog sports, I really started to see the same kind of issues that I see on the human side, where, you know, physical therapy is not enough for the person in order for them to get back to what they want to do. And that's the same on the canine side. You know, the dogs might have an injury and go for a few sessions of therapy. You know, they don't get a lot of the exercise component with that. They mostly get the treatment component. Put them in an underwater treadmill, do laser, do acupuncture. But they don't really get the enough of the exercise component to really be okay to return to their sport. Yeah. So those similarities kind of tied together. That was a huge interest for me on the human side. So it just became a natural thing for me on the canine side, where I see gait and I see asymmetry and I see things like that and I want to fix them and I want to even them out and I want to prevent things from happening. That kind of takes canine fitness to a different level than where we've been. So I'm really enjoying bringing my experience from the human side over to the canine side, and seeing the difference that it can make is really exciting for me. And, you know, yes, I compete in agility, but it's not just agility. It's any of the sports. You know, even people doing obedience with healing put certain strains on the dog from always being in certain postures. And people, we're asking our dogs to do more and more and more, just like we do with our kids in sports. So it's an exciting time where I think we can really take the training to a different level, but it's also fun for people. I mean, it's fun to have another thing to do with your dog, and it's benefiting them at the same time, but it's also helping your relationship and it's helping their confidence level with their skills. So that's kind of, it's become really passionate. And I actually do more canine fitness now than I do the human side, because it's fun for me. I mean, I just have such a great time with it. I did do a class in May. My training building's been shut down, just like most people in the pandemic. And, you know, I did a class fitness every day in May, so it wasn't on a particular topic, but it allowed beginners and more experienced people to be involved. I was posting something every day and still am, so there's always something somebody could do. Sometimes it was just using props at home. Sometimes there were no props. Sometimes you use FitPaws equipment. It was all over the place, so that there was always something for somebody to do. And then I was willing to provide video feedback for however many videos somebody wanted to post. And we ended up with over 80 people in the group, which was exciting.
That's super exciting.
I think a lot of people that just took it in and watched or asked questions, and then other people that are more proficient and have taken online classes, so they're pretty good at putting their videos up. As many videos as people want to put up, I'm giving them feedback. So it really turned out to be a really fun thing to do. And we're going to continue it. We're going to do it in May. It's only $14.95 for the month, which is a steal.
It's a steal, especially if you're giving all that feedback for unlimited. You're crazy. Yeah. I mean, good for you, but that's, people out there, you should buy this. That's crazy good.
You can't get that level
of feedback on Fenzy. Nowhere near that price.
No, it's but I think we need to get the message out there, because like I said, most people don't get into the fitness part until their dog is already injured.
Agreed.
And there's no reason for that, because the fitness part could prevent a lot of that from happening. And it needs to be more accepted as part of the training. You know, it is something that you do need to do on a regular basis when you're asking the dogs to do what we're asking them to do. So to get that word out there and to have people see quality is important. And I think this time I have an element that's also helpful, because I have my experienced dog Comet, who's, you know, 8 years old and has been doing this with me for a long time. And I really got started because of Comet. He had surgery at 7 months old for an intrahepatic liver shunt. So it gave him a lot of neurological problems to deal with. And the veterinarians at Tufts said to me, well, if he makes it through the surgery, I think you can do sports with him, but you're always going to have to do some kind of fitness with him because of the neurological issues. And that's absolutely true. He's a star in the fitness realm now, but if you don't do it with him, you see it right away. And you see it in his gait, and you see it in his jumping, and it affects him. So he has to be a lifetime fitness dog, you know, and it just turns out he loves it. He loves to do anything we want to do in fitness, and it's been great. So I really got involved because of Comet, and he's the dog in my logo. I made sure that he was the star in the logo. And now I have a new Australian coolie puppy named Kazi, and I flew all the way over to Germany to get Kazi back in November. So she's pretty special to me. And this is fun, because in these classes, I'm I'm showing the finished product, the professional in Comet, and then I'm actually teaching Kazi a lot of the things for the very first time. She'll just turn 8 months old on June 1st. So a lot of people have really been excited about the fact that I show Comet and they're like, oh, whoa, that looks great. And then they're like, oh my God, how am I going to get that? And then I take Kazi and I literally film it that day and she's never done it before. And I show them how to go through that process. I've had a lot of people write to me and say, you know, we truly love the way that you're showing us what you're doing with Kazi because she's never done it before. Instead of us just seeing a finished product we don't think we can ever get. So that's been really fun to do, to kind of compare the two together. And to also show people that in order to do the really fun stuff with Canine Fitness, you have to have the foundation just like in anything else. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
It's big.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important to show, like you were saying, that here's the beginning steps and here's what you want it to ultimately look like. And I think that's really important, especially with the online classes, because most people in those online classes are at least relatively new or beginners. That's why they're there. They want to learn. And if you're just showing them the end product, that, you know, you're showing them that beginning step, because then you're kind of eliminating some of that frustration that they may end up getting along the way while they're trying to build on that. So that's really cool that you have kind of each end of the spectrum there to show them that. I think that's really important.
Yeah, and you know, and Bobbi Lyons has been a leader in the field for a long time, and she's been, you know, a mentor to me also. And one of the things that, you know, I really liked about that method is that she is a clicker training. I mean, she is Karen Pryor, you know, certified, and so she uses clicker training in fitness to take things to another level, and that's how I believe that it should be taught. So, you know, you kind of balance that out, and most of the time in my class, we don't use a clicker for everything, but when people say to me, you know, how did you get that precise with Comet? Like, how did you get that exact movement with Comet? And it's really using the clicker. I mean, it just makes such a difference when you can do that and do it accurately and teach people to do that. So, you know, we have warm-ups in my class, and the warm-ups always involves warming up the humans too, to use the clicker correctly and to click at the right time and to click in the action of the movement, not the finished product. And I teach all of my classes that way, and I teach my dogs that way. And it's not that you don't learn some things, but you also have to teach the dog the difference between the two. So it really is interesting to me, because other people that maybe have been exposed to canine fitness along the way will say to me, oh, the way you do it, there's actual dog training. You know, because their exposure has just been kind of walk your dog over the equipment. No real understanding of the purpose of what exercise you're doing or what muscles the dog is using or the components involved. And, you know, that some dogs need more flexibility than others. Some just need more strength. Some need more work on one side than the other, or more on the back end than the front end. And it's really kind of taking those things apart and figuring out what your dog needs. And people need help with that. And then once they can really understand it, they're like, wow, you know, I can really make a difference. I can change. In all the dog sports, you know, jumping tends to be involved in some way, shape, or form. And that's an area where the fitness end of things can really help change things, as can working on the dog's stride and their gait for a lot of the dog sports. And people tend to think, oh, I have what I have. You know, you can't change structure just like in a person, but you can still improve the function and the movement skills. Some more than others, but you can always improve them. So that part of it has to be like really fun and challenging, or you just get frustrated. And I think that for me, it's really fun to work on those projects with people.
Yeah, I also think what's, just to go back to the clicker trainer, because Michelle and I are both avid clicker trainers. I actually am a Karen Pryor certified training partner too. And what I love is when we do go for rehab, because we've already caused the injury, because we most likely didn't have our dog up to, you know, optimal fitness strength, we go in for the injury, and because there's such a short time that the rehab, you know, person or facility has with them, they end up luring. But what I notice with luring, what we notice with all dogs, they're not actually thinking about foot placement. They're just following the cookie and throwing their body on the equipment.
Right.
And so the value in clicker training is you're, you know, really telling the dog, this is the move that I want. This is the precision. And that's how you can get the correct movements. That's what I found important with the canine fitness, is getting that correct movement, not just getting them, you know, up and over the peanut or whatever.
Yeah. And it's difficult for people, because the way the process works is similar to what, you know, a human goes through when they have an injury. And they get sent to physical therapy. And a lot of times it's more about modalities than it is about the actual function. They are long discharged before they're ready to actually do their sport. And that is the same thing with the dogs. I can't remember the last dog that I had coming off an injury that's come to my practice where they completed the process already in physical therapy. It just is impossible. They just don't have enough visits. They don't have enough time to spend to do that work with the dog. And it does take time, just like with a person. I mean, we all know that, you know, you go to the gym and then you don't go to the gym for a few weeks. And what happens? You lose a lot of strength in that small amount of time. You lose your cardio. The dogs do the same thing. It takes a while. And it's also thinking about the whole body. The dog might have, you know, just injured their knee. But what has that done to the rest of their body in order for them to get around while their knee was injured?
Throws everything off.
And oftentimes people don't, you know, the regular person doesn't think about it that way. They just think, well, I took them and I went to therapy. Or this is a big thing that happens, you know. I'll be teaching something like sidestepping in fitness class, and I'll have someone in my class say, you know, when my dog got a TPLO surgery, they wanted, you know, the therapist told me that she should be doing sidestepping, but she didn't know how to teach me how to teach my dog. Yeah. And that's something that's really lacking on the canine rehab side. Is in order to be a rehab therapist on that side, you're a human physical therapist first, and then you do a short certification to be a canine physical therapist. So there really is no dog training requirement for that to happen. And I mean, those people have already paid a lot of money to go to school for a lot of years. So they have the anatomy and physiology part of the equation, and they understand the diagnosis and they understand the protocols. But they don't have the dog training background to actually work with the owner and say, okay, here are some ways to teach sidestepping if we think lateral movement is important. So, you know, that kind of connection is huge. And, you know, it's similar on my end as it is on the human side, where insurance, because now more and more people have pet insurance, tends to cover some physical therapy visits, but they don't cover the dog coming to fitness class. So the natural inclination for the pet person, especially more than the sport dog person, is, well, I did what I was supposed to. I had the surgery. They sent me to PT, insurance covered 4 visits, and I'm good. And then the dog ends up not good for months and limping, and, you know, they're frustrated because they paid all this money for surgery. And so it really is a kind of like fine line where all the parts need to work together. And that is so similar from where I came from on the sports side. As health insurance changed and people couldn't get as many visits, instead of rehabbing a person with an ACL for 6 months, now you only got 6 visits. So really, if the person wanted to get back to their sport, they had to go to a strength and conditioning person in order to do that. And it came out of their own pocket. And so for me, that's such familiar territory. And I see the same thing on the canine side. And I think that's why for me, I kind of slid into it pretty easily. And let's be honest, the dogs don't whine the way the people do when you're trying to make them do their work.
Well, I was going to say that earlier. It's much better to work with dogs than people.
It's much better. It's much more fun and enjoyable, you know. But it's also fun to be able to teach the owners how they can have fun with their dog doing it. You know, it doesn't have to be this monotonous thing. It can actually be enjoyable. And there are some things you can do inside, and there are some things you can do outside. And you know, you don't have to have all the stuff in order to do it. There's always things around the house you can use for props to get things done. And that's one of the things I've really tried hard with this quick online class format is, you know, maybe on some of the days I use some of the equipment, but on other days I might not use any equipment. And on other days I might just say, use an ottoman or, you know, a kitchen stool at your house and do this, or work with a rocker or your fence outside and do this exercise. I think when people start to see that it's more about the movements and it's not about whether you have all the cool stuff, then they start to understand it a little better. They understand the purpose behind how that can help with their jumping or their stride or their running. So it's really up to the instructors to kind of, you know, paint a picture that they can buy into, and then it becomes fun to do.
Well, that's another thing I wish we would see, because it is so much fun, and I've done it myself too, is that there would be more classes for it. So you're obviously offering these online classes, and when things open back up, anyone that's, you know, within a comfortable driving distance from your facility should attend. But why do we have, you know, basic obedience and basic agility and basic all this, but there's so few conditioning courses out there, which are the fundamental foundation to most of these sports?
Well, one thing I can say that I find interesting is, you know, we have so many people in dog sports where titles are a big thing, right? You don't get a title for doing canine fitness.
No, but you could create a program. Why not?
You know, so that's I personally think that is something, you know, I mean, why do people go and get the trick titles? Because they get their title and they got their certificate. And, you know, there's something to be said for that. I mean, look at kids that are in martial arts programs. You know, they're constantly getting different color belts. Why? You know, yeah, the skill level requirement is different, but it's also a way to keep them motivated. I mean, if you told them they were going to have an orange belt for 6 years, that wouldn't keep a young kid motivated to keep coming back. So I think a lot of times people do get caught up in that part of it and say, well, I can do this and go get a tricks title. I can do this. I can get an obedience title. I can do this. And I, you know, it's interesting. And I think it's, if we have more quality instruction, then that's when I think you win over very dedicated people. I mean, I run several classes out of my small training building and, you know, usually have 4 to 5 students in my class. And, you know, and I have very dedicated people. I mean, I have some people that probably now have been coming to their same class 6 week sessions for probably 2 and 3 years straight, you know, and they'll say to me, I'm better off coming to class because otherwise when I think I'm just going to do it on my own, you know, it's like anything else, you kind of fall out of it. It also gives them a chance to work. I try to always have the latest, greatest equipment so that they actually get to experience and try those things without feeling like they have to buy it all. I think that's important too, because it keeps everything fresh so that they have a mixture of things they can do at home. And then they have different things that we can do in class. It also keeps the foundations fresh. I mean, we constantly practice, you know, front foot targeting and hind foot targeting. We're always doing things like that as warm-ups. And then we incorporate fun games in to go along with it. I think the other thing is that if you really get involved in it, a dog like Comet, you know, he actually can do a very long workout. I mean, he can do, you know, a 30-minute straight workout where you're doing 3 sets of 10 to 12 repetitions of several exercises or a complete circuit or 20 minutes of Cavalletti work. But you can't do that unless you really train the dog the way we would do a person, where you got to build up the sets and reps, and the dog does have to feel fatigue and get tired. You know, when people just kind of play around with it and do an exercise here or there, they don't really get to that point. And if we have sporting dogs, we really need to get to that point.
Yeah, that's, you don't want that weekend warrior that people, right. I think that kind of constitutes a lot of the sport. I think a lot of people have the weekend warriors and they go on hikes and walks and stuff throughout the week. But, you know, I think a little bit more is necessary.
Yeah, and I think the hiking and the walking, I mean, we all know that's beneficial, just like it is to the person. Right. But it is kind of interesting in the dog side, because some very experienced handlers you can have a conversation with at the, you know, at the top level, and you will have a mixture of diehard, you know, yes, we do our fitness, yes, that's really important to our success. And then you have the other side where they're like, I've been doing this for years and my dog goes on a hike, so they're all set. You know, my dog swims a little, so they're okay. And, you know, to some of those people, I say the same thing I would say to a person. I mean, you know, just because you can go and run or you can swim doesn't mean you have strength, because you're not doing any strength work. And if you're only lifting weights and you're not doing any cardio, then you're missing part of the equation. And it's the same thing with the dogs. I think it just hasn't been around enough formally for people to, you know, for everyone to buy into it yet. But more and more people are now.
Well, I also think with the, I guess the, you know, we're obviously focused in agility, but I am the prime example of a very bad example of somebody keeping their own self fit. And I am a weekend warrior where I sit a lot during the week, and I have had every tendinopathy you can imagine. You know, I've had it in my high hamstring tendinopathy. I'm blanking on all of the ones that I've had. I've had all these foot issues. I've had all of these problems, and it's because I haven't taken care of myself during the week. But because I know about that, the one thing I have done is taking care of my dogs. So it's just,
hey, the same way that people pay for the dogs to go have a massage, but they don't get one themselves, right?
Right,
I mean,
right.
It's, yeah.
Oh, my dog goes to the chiropractor way more than me. Yeah, way more than I do.
Yes.
Yeah. My dog's had acupuncture several times. I never have. So, yeah, it's, I think, and that's fine, because my dogs, the way I look at it is my dogs have such a short life that I'm going to make it as much of a comfortable life as I possibly can.
As you can. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think we've got to remember that it's, you know, it's always easier for people to take their dog to somebody to do a passive thing, right? Like you just show up and the other person does the acupuncture, the other person does the laser, the other person does the massage. When we're talking about fitness, there's a real relationship component to it in order for it to be successful. And I think that that can be a really positive thing, or you can have an owner that's intimidated by it and kind of goes, oh, that's going to take me way too much time for me to learn that. And then they just want to bring the dog to somebody. And, you know, I mostly see dog sports people, but I do have some dog, you know, chiropractors that send me some pet clients. Those are the people where I do have a couple of clients where their dogs have had injuries and the chiropractor sent them my way. And these people, the dog is just strictly a pet dog and they have no desire to spend all kinds of hours training the dog, but they want to do what's best for the dog and they want the dog to be better. And so with those few people, I do end up seeing the dog in a private lesson. They're not people who just want to come to class. They don't really want to do the work. They want me to do the work with the dog. And if they want to do that, then there's a few people that do that. Then I see the dog and I work with the dog and I help the dog. I mean, we all know that that's not the best case scenario because it takes a lot longer for the dog to get better. But it is what it is. I ran into that same thing when I worked on the human side of sports medicine. So, you know, you kind of have to take what's in front of you and say, you know, okay, well, I can still do some good for this situation by doing it that way. But one of the real skills involved in canine fitness is actually being able to work with the owners mm-hmm. to give them the confidence so that they feel good about going home. And it does become a fun thing for them to do with their dog. You know, it's not
really
this like
take that much time. If you really think about it, especially when you're starting out, I mean, how much time do you think a session can be sometimes for, especially like pet dog people? Like if they need something to do with their dog for the day, it's raining. You know, how much time would you say that they can spend on it just to kind of give an idea?
They could take 10 or 15 minutes, you know, and do something with them. I mean, I tend to give people two different things. I tend to give people a training exercise and then I tend to give them, okay, here's a conditioning exercise, you know, and then once they're a little bit more skilled with some of the foundation things, then it'll be like, okay, you know, maybe we set up a little circuit of two or three exercises, you know? But in the beginning, the training exercise part is hugely important because it's going to help the person be less frustrated if they can teach a nose touch to a flat hand, or they can teach what to do with a target stick and use a spoon to do that at home. They could teach a chin rest. Those are all things that in my classes I use as part of warm-up to teach people how to do them. But when I'm seeing people privately, I will give them that as homework because it's going to make their job easier and then it will be more fun. So it really does come down to using some of those things in order to be successful at it. And some people want to learn all that and some people don't. But when we get into the dog sport side of things, a lot of people have trained some of those skills. So they're ahead of the game when they come into the fitness side. So right. It's just taking a look at who you have and what they've done and what they haven't done. In some cases, they've had a bunch of equipment at home, but they don't really know how to use it. So, but they have some good foundation skills. And so then they feel much better about it because they're like, oh my God, I spent all that money on all that stuff a long time ago. And all I've done is really walk over it. I didn't know you could do all this with it.
Yeah, I was kind of in that boat when I first got it. I was like, I'm going to get all this FitPaws equipment. I'm going to get all of this stuff and that. And I'm like, okay, well, now what do I do with it?
yeah, exactly. You know, that's a big deal. You know, and just seeing how you can take a few things and make things really versatile and change it up and change the pace for both you and the dog to keep you motivated. Because, I mean, you go back to the same thing. This shouldn't just be about, oh, my dog got injured and now I have to do some fitness stuff. I mean, it's no different than a person. I mean, it is about keeping the dog fit for life. I have some older dogs in my classes that are retired from their dog sports, but people are shocked at what their age is, and it's because their owners have kept them really active, even though they're not doing the sports anymore. So I feel really good about that. I mean, I have some dogs who have had both knees done and they're, you know, 10 years old, 11 years old. And, you know, I have some that have been retired from the sport because they had an injury. And now because they've been doing fitness, they're back out hiking with their family and enjoying their life, playing with the other dogs in the house. And they didn't have that before fitness. So it's really important for the older dogs too. You know, there's a lot of conversation by a lot of different trainers and people about what's appropriate for a puppy, what's appropriate for a senior dog. And I'm a little more, I don't have any hard and fast rules for that. I take what's in front of me because it's really all over the board, depending on what the dog's structure is, what they look like, what their daily activity level is, what sports they do. And I go more by what I see. I mean, there's no doubt that I've had retired sport dogs come into class that are, you know, 10, 12 years old, and they are in better shape than some dogs that are 4 or 5 that come in. So, you know, I'm not going to look at that dog that's 12 and be like, oh, they shouldn't do this just because they're 12. I don't think you need to do that. I think as long as you really have your parameters straight and you know what the requirements are, you don't need to do that. I mean, Kazi is just going to be 8 months old. I've done a lot of shaping with her. I wouldn't do any repetitive jumping or crazy things with her because she's a puppy whose legs grew really tall really fast and she had to kind of find them all over again. So I've been very careful about what I do with her, but there's no reason that she can't be doing a lot of these things. You just can't do them for a lot of sets and reps, but you can do the teaching component of it so that she has the skills so that as she grows and she has more muscle and her joints close, she's ready to then do sets and reps because she has her foundation skills. And that's really, really important because the sooner you do that, the better. And the sooner the dog buys in and wants to participate and are willing participants. And you keep the sessions really short with a dog that age as compared to a dog like Comet who would just stay in there and work and work and work. And that's the other part, is knowing your dog. We kind of go through a little, I usually tell people when they come to class to bring a mat or a bed with them, whatever they want to do, a raised bed or a mat, and bring that to class with them, and to bring toys to class. We practice our mat training in between so that, you know, when you're going to set up your next piece of equipment, the dog's not stepping on it and in the way and can watch what you're doing. And then they're learning their mat training at the same time. And then we have toys, so we'll do an exercise, and then I'll say, play with your dog, and everybody plays with the dog. And if you have trouble with that, it's a great place to work on it. But you need to be able to incorporate those kind of things into the fitness part of class. It makes a big difference for the dog. You have to give them that mental break. You have to, you know, let them play a little bit along the way and not have it be all business. And then they can't wait to come, you know, the see the building and they're running in the building like, all right, what are we doing today? And that's always my goal with people, is to get them to really interact with the dog and not make it all business, but they need to also have the toy play in there, and then they need to have the control of the mat work so that they can set things up for the next thing we're going to do. So that's kind of how, you know, I run my classes, and I tell people to that they should also be working on it that way at home because it'll make a big difference for them.
We're going to take a quick break to hear a message from our sponsor.
Hey, Agility Addicts. I have a really cool sponsor to tell you guys about that I actually went after. Walter recently got his mock. Well, I know, surprising. And I wanted to celebrate it with his fan club. And so I wanted to bring something special. And we all know mock cakes are kind of off the table right now. They're not very COVID friendly. So I wanted something such as cookies, which could be individually wrapped. I checked with a bunch of local bakeries. They were booked way out. It wasn't, or they were prices that I was found a little pricey. So I looked online, and even though they're local to me, I found a really cool company called Wicked Good Cookies. Now in New England, wicked means very or super. And they live up to their name. They have $5 flat rate shipping nationwide. So whether you live in Tacoma, Washington, or Sarasota Springs, Florida, you can get these cookies for $5. If you live locally or you're at a trial I'm going to, I'm happy to pick them up for you. They'll give you some extra cookies. But they've also done us a deal because I explained to him all about, you know, agility and how we celebrate and mock cakes and how we need cookies instead and COVID safe. And for 15% off using the discount code STARTLINE, Wicked Good Cookies is honoring our discount, which is super cool. So please go check out wickedgoodcookies.com. You can also get them if you're local to New England through DoorDash, Grubhub. They're just in Boylston, Mass. 15% off your order. They can put anything you want on picture-wise. These are great for kids going back to school. It's also wonderful for weddings, birthdays. You can't be there, you can send a box of cookies. But more specific to agility for your championships or even just a great title or just, hey, let's make agility fun again. Check out Wicked Good Cookies and use a discount code STARTLINE to save 15% today.
And we're back. Besides, obviously, I would highly recommend you know, taking some of your classes, particularly having the online access. But if you've got somebody that, so let's cover three people here. You've got somebody that has a pet at home, which anybody that has any dog in their home, any dog needs some type of fitness, just like any human needs some type of fitness. And then you've got somebody that's interested in getting into sports. What should they be doing? And then you have your performance person. What should they be doing? And I look at that more for maintenance. They already have a dog that's in, let's say, ideal condition. What can they do to keep them in that condition? So the three different types of, you've got your pet, you've got your person wanting to get into performance sports, and then you have your person heavily involved in performance sports.
Yeah, I think the pet part of things can be very simple, and it has to be more about fun. And it's more about them spending time with their dog and you giving them some good foundation skills. And then maybe you give them something that only takes them 10 minutes to do, you know, three times a week at home. And I think if you accomplish that with the pet dog person, then that's still way ahead of where they were when they started. And sometimes it's enough to for them to be like talking to other people in class and say, you know, oh, well, maybe I would try that sport, you know, or maybe I would try that other activity. So I think it can kind of get them involved in other things if they have fun with it. So that's a big deal. I think that with, you know, with the dogs that are serious, what I find interesting is it's just like, you know, you have your kid, and I coached for a long time, and a parent's making the choice. You have one game a week, you have a practice a week. And if the parent's busy, the first thing the parent says is, well, I'm not going to be able to get my kid to practice, but they'll get the kid to the game because the game is fun for them to go and watch. Yeah. Practice isn't fun for a parent. It's a pain in the butt to get there. So I think that you also have that situation with certain sports. People that do agility almost every single weekend, plus they have a life and they're working during the week. It's a little bit, it's challenging to get them to understand that, you know, despite that, you know, they still need to get the dog to the point where if they're working that hard every weekend, the dog should still be able to do fitness 2 or 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you have to work at it to get to that point. You can't just kind of do it haphazardly. You can't do it once in a while. You can't only do it in the middle of winter because you can't go outside. It has to be consistent, just like it would have to be with an athlete and with a person. I really believe that you look at your schedule. I mean, I work with some high, with some top level competitors. I mean, Laura Dolan comes to see me with Pri, and most people in agility know who that is. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good example of, you know, depending on where she is during her season throughout the year, we look at the calendar and we kind of add up weeks and dates and when are the big competitions? When are the big tryouts? You know, when is she taking a month or 6 weeks where they're not really competing? And you look at that whole calendar year just like you would with a human athlete. Mm-hmm. And that's how we plan what we're going to do with Pri. So there are times during the year where Laura and Pri will just be in one of my classes. And then obviously Laura's doing a couple of things that I give her to do at home. There are other times where Pri's seeing me one-on-one and we're going for an hour and we're working really hard. And then Laura's also doing two pretty hard sessions at home that we put together. Yeah, I mean, you have to think about, you know, I mean, for Laura, she takes it really seriously. She sees what it can do.
She's dedicated.
For the dog.
She's kudos to her. Know? She's very dedicated to her dogs and herself.
Yes,
she's in very good shape. Her dogs are in excellent shape. She's one of my, you know, mentors, if not, you know, role models.
Yep.
So
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it's different, you know, you look at situations differently because she also makes her schedule so that she has time to do that. Mm-hmm. Because she's trying to compete at the level she is. You know, your everyday working person doesn't always have that kind of time. So, you know, when someone comes to me and on the human side and says, you know, can you make me a workout that will, you know, that will work for me? And usually they're all enthusiastic at first, but you know, in reality, once they talk to you, they're not going to have time to do everything they say they want to do. And so I usually then will say, okay, well, we're not going to start off with all of that. You know, we're going to start here and I'll simplify it. Or I'll say to the person, you know, okay, then let's talk about your schedule. When yep. exactly, you know, do you have, what days are you going to commit to doing this on? And on those days, do you have 20 minutes or do you have an hour and 20 minutes? What do you really have that you can truly commit to? And, you know, and I think you have to take that same mentality with the dog. If somebody looks at me and says, well, legitimately, I have this on this day, this on this day. I have a trial every weekend, da, 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 da. okay, if I really think about it, I probably have, you know, 20 minutes, 3 days a week, or a half an hour twice a week. It's better for the person to say that to me, because then it's up to me, the professional, to come up with a program that's best suited where you're going to get the most out of it if that's the time you have to put into it. That is much better than just overloading the person saying, this is a good program for your dog because of their structure and their base and where they're at. And then you look at it and go, okay, but the person's never going to get all that done because they don't have time. So it's really important to have those conversations so that it's a realistic goal. And then you have a much better chance of the person really being committed to it with their dog and really getting it done on a weekly basis. And it's also looking at the whole calendar year. You know, it's unrealistic. It's better to look at the calendar year and say, you know what, I'm going to be out of town these 3 weeks, but then I'm going to have a solid time, or I'm going to be at home, or I'm going to be traveling. And really to look at the calendar and to actually plan out a schedule. Yeah. And that's what I do with somebody like Laura and pre-schedule is to look at it and to really plan around the whole calendar year and break it down into quarters, you know, and kind of work with it that way. And also take into account the other things someone like that is doing. I mean, if I know she's going to go run 3 miles, you know, 4 days a week, okay, well then how many days a week do I want pre to do that, depending on what else I'm giving them to do. So it really is about that communication. And then it's up to me to look at the person and say, okay, realistically, this is the time you have that you really can commit to. So now I'm going to give you the exercises that I think can benefit your dog the most in that amount of time. And that becomes, you know, a reality then and something people can commit to. And I mean, the thing I would love people to see, which is the same thing I feel about fitness on the human side, is that rather than waiting until something's wrong or you're broken and have a lot injury, that you do some things and you make it a priority before that happens. Because injuries are still going to happen, but when they do, the recovery will be just so much faster if you've done all this preparation ahead of time. And that doesn't matter if you're a dog or you're a human. It goes together. So it's really hard to get people to buy into that. I have so many human clients where until they blew out their knee, they never did a regular fitness program. And then they had to go through all that rehab and they were like, you know, I've benefited in so many other ways, not just with my knee, that I need to do this the rest of my life. And I think on the dog side, it's the same way. And we have some issues on the dog side where, you know, dogs blow out a knee and the first thing the veterinarian usually says to the owner is
surgery.
Well, is surgery, and odds are they're going to do the other one in the next year. Yeah. Right. I question that somewhat because I don't think the rehab on the canine side has, you know, kept up to the surgery part. I think the surgery part got way ahead.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
You do have to wonder if the dogs really got fully rehabbed the way we look at really, truly fully rehabbing a person, if we would see as much of the second knee going. And that's something that I think will play out over time, because we're getting better and better at getting the dogs back and keeping people committed to, like, okay, the dog's back, but you have to make keeping that dog in condition a priority. It'll be interesting to see kind of where that goes, because I have to believe that if more work was done with the dog after the first knee, that maybe we wouldn't have quite as many and we wouldn't just be automatically assuming the second one's about to happen, you know? So that'd be something that I would love to see change in the future, if possible.
Yeah, that's great. And I love that you are able to be realistic in your goals with the people, and they can be realistic with you on how much time that they can spend doing this. And I know for me personally, I have a 4-year-old Toller, Sirius, who has an autoimmune condition and was recently on steroids and lost a lot of muscle mass in his rear end. And it's something that I have to work towards. And it's quite nice to know that you do that personalized schedule, because in my experience, just my personal experience, going through different like conditioning classes and looking at different programs, you know, it's hard to find that personalized program to you based on how much time you have to spend on, you know, conditioning and fitness work and stuff like that. So it's really nice to see and hear that you offer that and that you spend that much time and you're realistic about it, because, you know, you can spend 10 to 15 minutes 3 times a week, but you want to make sure that you're optimizing those 10 to 15 minutes 3 times a week and really targeting the right areas and where you need to,
So it's really nice to hear that you're able to do that. And looking at everybody's schedules, it's really cool.
Yeah, it's important. I mean, it's people talk about compliance, and you know, if you want to get compliance and you're the coach or the trainer, then you really have to work in those parameters or you're not going to get compliance. If you don't get any kind of compliance, you're not going to make any progress. And, you know, I'm going to be more successful. The owner's going to look at me as, you know, being more helpful to them if they see progress. And the way to see progress is for me to be real precise on, like, okay, this is what I have to work with. So how can I make progress in that amount of time and get it done? And I think that that's part of the art and science behind it, is being able to do that. Also, being able to explain to the person that, you know, sometimes you have to go backwards in order to go forward. Yeah. And that's a really hard thing for people to accept. That's not what anybody wants to hear. And I think sometimes in these instances, if the people have no background in teaching their dogs these things and then the dog gets hurt, it's really hard for them to understand that, like, oh my God, I got to go back and teach them this and this in order to be able to do that. And it's like, basically, yes, you know, you do. And I think that that's really important. And that's often not something that, you know, when they're with the physical therapist, that they have any time to do, or they don't have the dog training background to help the person do it. So that combination of working together with those people is also really important, you know. And it's the same way with the chiropractors. I mean, you know, I really like to know with all my clients, like, okay, who do you go to? Who do you take the dog to? You know, because I have a pretty good idea in my area of how different people do things now. And so it's much easier for them, me to work off of that also, because I can kind of predict what that person's going to do. Or the person's doing fitness that I can say, okay, nope, oop, time for you to make an appointment. You know, because I can tell that something's off. And so I like that team approach. And it's the same way with massage. I don't really want to go down that road where I'm trying to be the jack of all trades. So many people on the fitness side then go, okay, I'm going to get my massage thing, and then I'm going to get this. And, you know, and I don't really have a desire to do that. I just have a desire to work with good people who do those things so that I have a good referral base and they can do the same to me. Because there's so much to be done on the fitness side that I don't need to try to be the jack of all trades and take on all those other things. I enjoy the fitness part of it and how it builds off the rehab and how it's a good prevention, and also the sports performance part. You know, I can look at a dog and say, okay, you know, if you got better at Cavalletti work, like, that stride's going to change, and then that in turn is going to help your jumping. And then, you know, look at a way the dog jumps and say, okay, they're not really using their hind end the way that they should. They're putting everything on the front, and you're bringing them to the chiropractor in every week because they have shoulder tightness, but it's coming because they're overworking the front end. They're not using the back end. So if we actually exercise the back end, it's going to take that stress off the front end. Those are all things that, you know, are fun for me to do because I like biomechanics, and I like looking at the whole person, and I like looking at the whole canine. Rather than just, here's what they said was wrong. You just can't do that. If you're really into biomechanics, you have to see the whole big picture, and then you have to be able to take it down into pieces and parts. And if I can correct something when something's when there's asymmetry there, it's up to me to really pick like one or two things for the person to work on, so that when they come back, like, it took care of like five things.
Well, yeah, asymmetry is my biggest nightmare, because I get an injury because I don't take care of myself, and then that injury throws everything else off, which then literally causes another injury. So I'll get bursitis in my right knee, and then lo and behold, that resolves, and where do I get bursitis next? My left hip. And yes, it's a never-ending battle. So
yes, and that's I have a certification in corrective exercise, and that's what that means, is basically, you know, you don't look at just where the injury is. You look at the whole person and you look at the biomechanics. You know, when you look at that, you can pretty much predict where the person's having a problem and then where they're going to have it next if you don't change. I'm seeing that same thing now when I look at the dogs. Yeah. You know, I will pick up things, and I do use a lot of videotape, and I will do a lot of slow motion videotaping on the dogs in order to show the owners, because they'll look at me sometimes like, what? Well, I don't see it. The dog looks fine. And I'll be like, no, I'm going to show you. Well, I'll do a lot of slow motion, you know, to show them.
And I definitely encourage people to, if you feel that your dog is in a normal state, collect video of your dog with a normal gait so that if in the back of your mind you're like, oh, are they limping? Is something off? You can always refer to, this is something, I work for a pet first aid and CPR company as well. And this is something I've always recommended as a pet first aid and CPR instructor, is have a baseline. Know when your dog is at optimal health, what their normal is, and record that so that you can refer back to it. Because just like with a puppy growing, all your friends say, oh, he got so big in a week. And you're like, I didn't notice a thing. It's because you're looking at him every day. And if you can stay vigilant and consistent in knowing what's normal so that you can recognize when it's off. I mean, obviously, we want to get to Karen before it's off. But if
it's going to happen,
it's going to happen. Yeah, of course.
It's, you know, and if they're playing sports, I mean, it's, you know, okay, all of a sudden they, you know, smashed into the stanchion or something or came down off one of the contacts hard. I mean, there's always going to be some, you know, some issues like that. And then you have structure, just like you do in a person, where, you know, structure is better in some than others. But it doesn't mean there aren't things that you can't address. I mean, Comet is a perfect example of that. I mean, he definitely has the neurological deficits that they talked about. And it's nothing that a regular person would even notice. They'd see him running around and they'd be like, what are you talking about? He's got nothing wrong with him, you know? However, the minute I back off on his fitness at all, I mean, it becomes really obvious. And you're like, okay, that wouldn't be good, because all of a sudden he's sprinting across the dog walk and he's going to run himself off the dog walk to one side because he just isn't, you know, he's so asymmetrical. Now, can he ever be perfect? No. But if I do his fitness, he's close enough to perfect that he's not going to injure himself doing something like that. That's not within his control. And that's really important. And I think the other thing is, I try to tell people with, you know, strong-minded sport dogs. I mean, you know, you get into the border collie thing and you get into some tougher little dogs and, you know, you really have to pay attention because those dogs have a tendency to not have a lot of self-preservation. And, you know, if the owner doesn't want to see that something's wrong, it's going to be so slight that they kind of, you know, they kind of ignore it because they're like, oh, no, you know, they did this, but they didn't stop. They're fine, you know, but then 2 weeks later, there's a problem. And it's because those dogs are tough and they don't really care much about self-preservation. So, you know, the owners have to be even more attentive with a dog like that. Comet mm-hmm. would never not go and run the dog walk, but I have to be attentive enough to say, you know what, like, you know, here we go. Like, that doesn't look so good right now. So for a week or two, I'll really get serious about it with him. And then the next thing you know, he's fine. And I wouldn't worry about him at all running the dog walk. So I do see that if he was in a different home and his owner just didn't really want to be bothered doing that kind of work, that no, it wouldn't be safe for him to do a sport like agility. But as long as you do the work, it's safe for him. And you have to be able to look at that and recognize it and be okay with it and be committed to it. I think that people now are starting to recognize it. But if you go back to the foundation and people buy this equipment, but they're never really taught, you know, what muscles they're working or whether the muscles are even actually working when they're doing the work. You know, momentum is something that people use too, because if you use momentum, everything seems easier. But if you slow it down, your muscles actually have to have control and work. And that's a big issue with sport dogs. You know, they have to slow down when they're doing fitness exercises in order to really activate their muscles. And that can be a challenge when you have a really, you know, driven dog, to slow them down enough to
Border
get them
collie.
To. Yeah, you know, it's, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, like right now, I mean, Kazi's an Australian coolie. I mean, that's a herding dog, very similar to a border collie.
I love coolies. I met one. I mean, Caleb is probably two or three now. Louise Simmons Hinckley's.
Yep.
He's wonderful dog. Wonderful.
Yeah. I like the coolies.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's they're a little. I mean, it's definitely a different mindset, which is why I actually wanted to get one, because I knew that they had a different mindset, so it was a different challenge. Kazi's very different to work with than Comet. It's funny because both of Kazi's parents are big herding dogs over in Germany, and they herd huge, you know, on huge sheep farms, but also cattle. I mean, they're both very tough dogs. And I met them and saw them work, and it's just really interesting because Kazi, from the time I brought her home, you already see that herding instinct in her. And when she first started to play with Comet, that's all she wanted to do was herd Comet. And Comet had no clue that she was herding him, because he's the first thing from a herding dog you'd ever want to meet. So he'd be like running and be like, I don't understand what she's doing. Like, I thought we were playing chase, but she's running in a circle.
Yeah, he's is he like Hound Lab or what is Comet?
He is a rescue dog, and he is actually Staffy.
Okay.
Jack Russell and cattle dog.
Okay, makes sense. Yep.
So he's quite a mixture. But it's just interesting because he's also been good for Kazi, because if I have them in the huge corral that we have, he can actually get Kazi chasing back and forth with him now. Because he just refused to play her game and he wanted to play his game. So she'll do that. But if we're out on the 5 acres running, she goes right back into herding mode with him. And he just kind of looks at her like, that's not how I play, you know? So it's actually really cute. He's been really good for her. I would have said in the beginning, I would have really had to work on her turning in the opposite direction, because most herding dogs pick one side that they like better. And because she said Comet is a playmate, she's now turning on both sides. Nice. And you wouldn't know the difference. So that's a good example, too, of paying attention to some things like that, that some of the breeds just naturally do. You know, I don't want my dog to only turn in that one direction, even though that's what they're comfortable with. And so in fitness, they're going to work in both directions, and they're going to work on the right and left sides of me. And so all of that kind of plays into the symmetry part of things, too. There's so many people that don't realize it. You know, I'll look at a dog that'll be more developed on one side than the other, and I'll say, you know, do you notice? Does your dog always turn to the left? And they'll look at me like, I don't know. I'm like, even when they're playing or whatever, and they're like, I don't know. You know, like, I don't think so. And then you'll put them out there and the dog's just only going one direction. So, you know, that's something that you have to pay attention to, and you kind of run interference and you get them running the other way when they're young. And I think in Kazi's case, I was looking for it. And then on top of that, Comet doesn't play that way. So it's been really good for her to go in both directions. So, you know, everything's different and everything's always changing. They're both very different dogs in the way that they work, and it's fun to see the differences. And that's one of the things I've enjoyed about just kind of throwing this class out online, because of the training being closed, is being able to work with both of them. And I think it's really helped people to see, like, okay, here's my beginner dog who I haven't taught any of this to yet, and here's the finished product. And it makes people feel good about it. They're like, okay, well, I can do that. You know, I can do that beginner part. So it's you know, it is something to think about. And I think for Kazi, obviously, she'll be a demo dog in my business too. But, you know, time will tell where that goes. But she definitely was brought into the picture, and I've been working with her on the foundations because of it. But we've had so many puppy things to work on that most of the exercises that I've done with her in this class in May have been the first time she's ever done them. So it's really actually been fun to just see the foundation come in and take over.
Yeah, though, that's great. I mean, this has all been such awesome information and super educational. I've learned so much already just listening. And I mean, and I signed up for the May class, and there's so many things on there. It's definitely worth it. So to wrap things up a little bit, do you have anything that you want to say in terms of how people can reach you, you know, either Facebook, email, how people can find out more information about the Facebook class? Because I know you're going to continue on into June doing this, which is awesome. So yeah, anything that you want to kind of put out.
Yeah, we're going to start the June session on Monday, right on June 1st. And it's only $14.95. And you can sign up by just sending that via PayPal to Karen K, K-A-R-E-N-K-A-Y, at metrocast.net. And that's my PayPal address. You send the $14.95. And then if you're not friends with me on Facebook, then send me a friend request and I'll add you to the group. And I will be posting a different exercise every day in June in that group. And people are invited to submit as many videos as they want to. And I will give them help and feedback. And in May, we had a great time. And I know a lot of people that participated in May are going to participate again in June. So we'd love to have some new people on board. And it'll be a whole different set of exercises. And no pressure. Some people have joined and said, I'm not good with the videotape, but they just want the information. And that's fine, too. So
I love the daily commitment. I mean, you know, really good for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's good. It's been fun, and it's kind of fun to mix everything.
I can't
up
even
and,
work myself,
you know,
out 3 times a week. My dogs are good, though.
You can. The dogs are good. All right.
The dogs are good. I am not a good example of a human.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I'm terrible. My dogs I will take a lot of credit for my dogs. My dogs are in exceptional shape. I'm not so much.
All right. You got to start somewhere. You started with the dog. It's good.
I've been saying that for a long time.
It's good. But no, yeah, I would love to have more people join us because it's such a steal of a deal. How about that?
Oh, yes, it is.
It's a great deal. And, you know, and you will get a lot out of it, even if, like I said, you don't have to have all the equipment at home. Some things will involve equipment. Some things will involve nothing. Some will involve some props you can use at home. So there's something for everybody, and you don't have to do every single exercise. You can pick out the ones that week that you really want to focus on. And sometimes I might make suggestions on other things you should do that are not there. But it's really just to get people more committed to understanding that fitness is for life for the dog and that we can do it a few minutes a day and have it make a big difference. So hopefully people will want to jump in and join me, and also feel free to use that same email address if people are interested in private lessons or any of my group classes for when they start back up in Deerfield. I'm also available for workshops and seminars as those start to happen again. Go to different facilities and to do that. So many different options to get people excited about doing fitness and carrying through with a program for the rest of their dog's life. So I appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, we're so grateful for that you could come on and dedicate your time. And you're clearly passionate about what you do, and it shines through. And I was super excited to have you on because I've been following you for a while. So, yeah.
All right, that's great.
All right, well, thank you so much, Karen. Do you have anything else to add?
No, I think we're good. And like I said, anytime I can get out and convince people that, you know, this is such a fun thing to do with their dog, then that's the big thing. And then you'll see the change in their performance as well, which will make you happy too. So, you know, come and experiment a little bit online and see what you think. And then, you know, if you have any questions, feel free to email me and I'd be happy to answer them.
Awesome. And we will put your information in the show notes as well. And I think for this evening, we're going to say adieu.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Have a great night.
You too.
Hey, Agility Addicts, thanks for listening. Hope you guys learned a lot this episode. I know we did. Check us out and join us on the conversation at our Facebook at StartlinePod, or send us an email at startlinepod@gmail.com. And we also want you to subscribe and review us on all your podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts. Help support us to support you by providing you with the essential information at anchor.fm/startlinepod/support. Thanks, guys.